First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to speak at this conference, which unfortunately is held online. But yeah, as Susanna already mentioned, I'm going to talk to like a follow-up to the presentation of Susanna. And it's a work in collaboration with her, Andrea, Leonardo, Thomas, and Paolo, and it's going to appear very soon on the archive. So let's take it back from here. So it's a slightly different plot than the one that Susanna showed, but it's again plotting the defacing accumulated from a binary of an emery compared between the case when the secondary is uncharged and the prime and the case where the secondary is instead charged for five different charges. And it is for a prototype emery where the mass of the primary is 10 to the 6 solar masses, the spin is 0.9, and the mass of the secondary is 10 solar masses. So we can plot here the defacing accumulated over 1 year before the plunge. And as you can see, so this gray line here is setting the detectability that LISA can distinguish for a defacing if the SNR of our signal is 30, which is like a pretty safe assumption. And as you can clearly see, like even down to 0.005 for the normalized scalar charge can go above this threshold. So the question is, are we really able to measure scalar charges down to 0.005 or less with LISA? And I mean, this is something very optimistic. The answer is no, but there is still a lot that we can say, even by playing this game very safely. So to be more precise, what did we do? We created templates of waveforms. So the idea is to use the formulas that Susanna showed before for the flux of energy radiated by the binary. And as, if you remember, this will be made by a term, which is the GR1, plus another term, which is quadratic in the scalar charge, in this universal and theory independent manner. And if you assume like a circular orbit for the secondary around the primary, we can consider an adiabatic evolution of the in spiral. So we have an evolution for drdt and dphi dt. And we can plug all of this into the quadruple formula. So we can create the metric perturbation in the TT gauge. It's what is called the analytic clutch. So basically the metric perturbation in this form will be inversely proportional to the distance luminosity of the source. And here P is the projector along the wave unit direction. And the metric perturbation is proportional to the quadrupole moment. And this is related to the stress energy tensor through this equivalence here. So it will be proportional to the mass of the secondary. And this Zi, Zj are nothing but the Cartesian position in the reference frame centered at the primary. And we just according to transformation, we can rewrite this Zi as functions of the radius and the phase that I showed in the two equations before. So with these ingredients, we can create the strain for the gravitational wave emitted by the system. But then we would like to compare to different emissions to see if LISA is really capable of measuring and distinguishing a signal with a scalar charge and a signal with respect to a signal without a scalar charge. So in order to do so, we have to introduce an inner product between two templates. So let's say we have a template measured by LISA H1 and our template H2. The inner product is defined by this formula where we take the Fourier transform of the two signals and we divide them by the noise spectral density of LISA, which is shown in this plot. I'm pretty sure that all of you have seen this plot already. So, and it's integrated between zero, like a very small threshold frequency, up to the frequency of the ISCO, which is the highest possible. And so the idea is, like, we want to compare a GR signal with a non-GR signal. And the best way to do it is through the so-called faithfulness, which, if you don't know what it is, it's like maximizing this inner product over the time and phase offsets. And it gives, like, if you compare, like, H1 is equal to H2, then the faithfulness will be one. Otherwise, if the two waves are orthogonal, the faithfulness will be zero. So anything in between is like a combination of the two bases. So this is the plot that shows the faithfulness between the GR signal and a non-GR signal for different choices of the scalar charge of the secondary. And here we are assuming, again, an SNR of 30 for the emission. And this gray line, again, is the LISA capability to distinguish faithfulness. So anything that is below this line will be seen as LISA, as something different from the GR emission. So as you can see, for 6 months of observation, the only signal which can be hardly distinguishable from GR is for a charge of 0.005. But if you wait for 12 months, then this will start to become distinguishable. Anyway, for longer time, it will be increased for sure. But yeah, all of this is still not enough to have parameter estimation, because we are still missing possible degeneracies. If you remember, we are fixing our system as a prototype. So we are fixing the mass of the primary, the spin, the mass of the secondary. So to do a more precise analysis, we decided to do some parameter estimation. So let's start, first of all, by counting all the parameters that are necessary to create our waveforms. So we have 11 parameters. The first three are the mass of the primary and of the secondary, and the spin of the primary. Then we have the luminosity distance of the binary. Then these four angles, theta s, phi s, which are the source orientation with respect to the position of LISA, and then the spin orientation of the binary, again, with respect to LISA. And then r0 and phi0 are just the initial condition for the radius and the phase. And then finally, the most important parameter that is the one we want to study is the scalar charge of the secondary. So now that we have a very powerful tool, which is the Fisher matrix. So if we are in the limit of a large SNR and we assume Gaussian priors for the parameters, we can say that the observation is well approximated by a Gaussian centered around the true, or like the injected values. So the procedure is the following. If you can define the Fisher matrix using the internal product that I defined before, which is nothing by taking the derivative of the, it's a matrix composed by the derivative of the waveform with respect to all of the parameters and evaluated at the position of what are called the true values, or like the injected values. And then if one takes the inverse of the Fisher matrix, on the diagonal of this matrix, you can read the statistical errors related to all of the 11 parameters that we want to measure. And the off-diagonal terms are instead measuring the correlation between parameters. So by using this formalism, it is possible to make a forecast on the error that LISA is capable to set on scalar charges if the secondary black hole is charged. And all of this information is shown in this plot here. So in the top panel, I'm showing the relative percentage error for the scalar charge. So here we have sigma d over d, so the error for the scalar charge normalized by the scalar charge itself four different choices of the injected value of the scalar charge. And you see, like for the green line, for an SNR of 30, we have that small charges would have a larger percentage error, but then as the charge increases, the error looks like very good, like of the order of 10%. And like there are forecasts that EMRIs can have even a much larger SNR in more optimistic scenarios. So yes, thank you. And as you can see here, like a larger SNR would push down by a lot the error that Lisa would be able to put on the scalar charges. And on the lower panel, I'm instead showing the 3 sigma interval for the values of the charges. So it's kind of equivalent to the upper panel, but you can see that only for SNR 30 and 0.05 scalar charge, this can be confused with like a zero scalar charge. Instead, in all of the other cases, the observation made by Lisa is unambiguously different from GR without any problem of correlation with the other parameters. So we think that these results are really important because they're showing the extreme strong potential of LISA capability to set constraints on scalar charges of compact objects. So this was like the first attempt to perform a rigorous estimation of the measurability of beyond GR effects using EMRIs. And as you have seen from the plot, we can constrain a charge down to 10% error, making conservative assumption, but larger charges can get even smaller errors. And the good thing of this procedure is that it's theory agnostic, but as Susanna was mentioning, you can always trace it back to theories in which you can do a mapping between the fundamental coupling and the scalar charge. And as future works, as Susanna again was mentioning, we can include the effects of a larger eccentricity or extend the models to a different field content or multiple scalar fields. And the most intriguing things is probably to include these templates, as they're rather simple inside the fast EMRI waveform package, and try to perform MCMC simulations. So that's it. Thanks all for the attention.
Thanks a lot, Nicola. So we have a question from Lorenzo. Please go ahead and ask your question, Lorenzo.
Hi, Nicola. Very nice work and great talk.
Thank you.
I was wondering when you dealt with the Fisher matrix, usually for EMRIs, there are many instabilities when you do the inversion. I was wondering.
This is a good question. Like the Fisher matrix are pretty unstable. So we have also performed, I didn't want to put too many details because it was short in time, but we also performed a singular value decomposition. I don't know if you're used to it. So like removing the tiniest of the eigenvalues of the Fisher matrix. And this actually improves by like another good quantity the estimate on the errors. So yes, we had problems with that. So we had to increase a lot the precision of the integration for the fluxes. But in the paper that will come out, there will be details about this.